for Facts on Sports.
Plays, it's intercepted, and the Tigers go in the other. Woo!
What a hit! Denzel Ward!
With Facts and Childress.
You got barbecue back there?
And Sam Jones.
And you didn't invite me?
Oh, what a shot from Cole!
And now, here are your hosts, Facts and Childress and Sam Jones on Roar FM.
We welcome you in, everybody, to the Tuesday edition of Facts on Sports with Facts and Childress and Sam Jones here on 105.5-97.5 The Roar. It is Tuesday, July 21st, 2026. We are glad to have you with us on The Roar. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in. Our Pratt Injury Lawyer phone lines and Adam Zico Roofing text lines will be open throughout the course of the program today. I would love for you guys to check in and join us as we've got much to discuss on a Tuesday. Obviously going to continue to map out ACC football predictions for the upcoming season. It's SEC football media days as well. So we're going to be getting into the nitty gritty in relation to that. Really looking forward to talking SEC football, talking ACC football with y'all. I will talk a little bit more about the World Cup recap because we really just got a brief moment to talk about it yesterday. I wanted to break down the game and ask for you guys' opinions on the World Cup as a whole. And obviously such a big event here in the country throughout the course of the last couple of months. Bravo's got the job done last night. Sam's team got the job done last night as well. So a good day in the world of baseball here for the program, and very exciting stuff for Atlanta, who really feels like they're starting to get back on track. Bryce Elder feels like he's starting to get back on track as well, which is something that's great. And then we've got Levi Matthews joining the program in the final hour for a handful of segments, and he's going to be talking about this time of the calendar specifically and what it looks like getting geared up and prepped for a Clemson football season. As a former Clemson football player, he spent the last 4 years repping the Paw, so excited to hear what he has to say. As I want to say, it's 47 days until kickoff, 45 days, something like that until kickoff. I probably need to have a better timer that's just locked into my lock screen or something along those lines, Sam. But we'll bring you in on that note. Hope you had a good Monday and excited for the Tuesday show.
I think it's 46. It could be 45. It's 45 or 46. I don't know. It's somewhere in there. It's close. It's close. How you doing today, Faxon? How you feeling? How you feeling this morning, man?
Feeling good. I'm excited to be here and busy day on the itinerary once again today. But, you know, they're already talking about who will be blamed if the Eagles fall short this season on national television 60 days before the season starts. So
it's always a good sign.
Great start to the day. And let me just tell you, they will be falling short this season and they will not be winning the Super Bowl.
The number is 56.
It's 56 days?
You said 55 and or 45 and 47. So you split the middle there.
Interesting.
46 more days. I feel like just yesterday it was 60. And then it'll feel like just yesterday it was 46. Closer and closer every day. Talking season is here. Did you see the SEC? I assume we'll talk about the propaganda from SEC Media Day yesterday. We never really talked about the propaganda from ACC Media Day last week, which I also found equally funny. If we're going to make fun of the SEC for it, we got to make fun of the ACC too. But a lot of propaganda being spread right now.
Yeah, I love Rhett Lashley. That's probably one of my favorite coaches in our conference. And I love the way that he bangs the drum for our league. And I love the way that he kind of showcases how stupid the SEC sounds when they slant numbers and data in their advantage. Because the data can tell whatever story you want it to tell if you know how to frame it. And that's what Rhett Lashley has proved the last handful of years at ACC Media Day. Do we know that the ACC is nowhere near as quality as the SEC? Yes, we do. Realistically, that's just the case in the reality of the situation. But when given a certain subset of data points and an angle and a narrative, well,
I was thinking of Narduzzi.
You have a little bit different of a conversation. Yeah, Narduzzi, I saw him dig in on the Big Ten specifically, which is just a little funny. They usually don't catch the heat. Lashley's more of an SEC hater. I guess Narduzzi just hates the Big Ten. He's a little bit closer to them location-wise. So shout out to Pat Narduzzi, I guess.
You get Narduzzi in front of a microphone, he's going to be in the news about 10 minutes later.
Credit to him. I always try and piece together what the last segment of Mickey's show was about if I didn't catch it in the car. And I'm struggling here, catching up on some texters. I see a lot of complaints about prices. What would did you tune into the last segment
not.
Of the program?
I did not catch it.
Somebody clue me in on what Mickey was talking about on in the last segment.
It's like a game. It's like a game for us when we come back to the text line and just see what it's looking like. See what Mickey was on about. Because it's not serious on the last segment more often than not.
Oh no, it can't be serious in the last segment. Texter gets in at the beginning of our show and says, "I believe anything less than 9 wins this year is a failure. That leaves room to lose to one team we are better than, 8 or less, and we need to have legitimate conversations about replacing Dabo." Can I take a breath before we start the show, brother? No, in all seriousness, I appreciate you checking in. But that is a heavyweight hitter to start things out. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to get in on Clemson football. And we'll be discussing Clemson football pretty in-depth today throughout the course of our ACC breakdowns as those continue. I promised the audience a continued breakdown on our top 4 teams in the ACC, or at least my top 4 teams in the ACC, with the way that I voted it up in Charlotte, in which I have Clemson 3rd. And admittedly, I gave Clemson every ACC game against teams that they're quote-unquote supposed to beat, right? I have the Tigers at 10-2 and 7-1 in conference play. I think that's probably a little bit too bullish, realistically. But I also know that Clemson's not going to get a lot of love from the non-local market in the media. And my honest prediction would probably be 9-3. And that's probably where I'm at right now. I think it's likely that with a first-time starting quarterback, with a play caller that hasn't called plays in ages, with a lot of different holes on your offense and a lot of different holes on your defense, and I say holes meaning unknowns, right? I think there's a chance that a lot of those players are productive, or I wouldn't be picking Clemson to win 9-plus games. You might drop one to a Virginia Tech or, you know, another team on your schedule along the way, or God forbid a South Carolina, even though, in my opinion, that would be preferred than losing an ACC game, right? Because you would still have a chance to go to the college football playoff. But ultimately, Sam, I think that this team has a pretty safe floor of being better than they were last year, just simply from a buy-in, a coaching, and a defensive talent in the secondary standpoint. The offense is going to control your ceiling. That's where I'm at. Like, people have asked me, can you simplify things into one sentence for Clemson football? Your defense gives you a high floor. Your offense controls your ceiling. That's where I'm at on 2026 Clemson football headed into the upcoming season. And I'm really bullish that this defense is going to be able to keep Clemson in a lot of games and help win Clemson a lot of games. So we can expand the conversation on that note. 654-ROAR, if you'd like to check in. Do you think 3rd in the ACC on my ballot is too bullish on the Tigers, granted the amount of unknown and the failures of last season?
I have them going somewhere between 7-5 and 9-3s, probably 8-4. I think they're probably going to go 8-4. I don't see them pulling off some shocker at any point. Like, I don't think they're going to get Miami or LSU. I don't think they're going to pick either of those off. But the rest of the schedule isn't terrible. You don't have to play SMU. You don't have to play Louisville this year. And that wasn't a problem last year. Those are the teams I believe you have 2nd and 4th in your ballot. So
yes.
You're only getting one of the first, one of the other 3.
And you don't play, I have Wake Forest 5th, so in my ballot personally, Clemson avoids 3 of the top 5 teams in the ACC,
sure,
themselves included.
You get South Carolina at home, which hasn't been pretty the last couple of years, but you figure that's got to switch at some point. They're not going to lose 3 straight at home, at least you hope not, or then that's going to be a whole different conversation. I've been at 8-4 pretty much the entire time. I think their defense is going to be good. I think their offense is going to be mid. And from January on, since they finalized the roster and we knew they weren't bringing in other quarterbacks and they hired Chad Morris, 7-5, 8-4 has been where I'm at. I don't think that that is a bad thing if it looks the way I hope it looks, which is one of the quarterbacks looks interesting enough to play next year, or you believe they can play next year. I don't really care which one it is. I don't care if it's Vezina. I don't care if it's Tate Reynolds. I don't care if it's you. And the defense looks good and improved in year 2 under Tom Allen. I'd take 7 or 8. I know that's not going to be super popular. Obviously, it's not a national championship. That's not an ACC championship. But in a year where everybody kind of knew before last season started, this was going to be a kind of retooling year, with everybody leaving to the NFL and graduating, even before it turned into a disaster season. We all knew this was going to happen this year. We knew what the roster was going to look like realistically. We didn't know what the portal situation would be. They changed their portal philosophy out of necessity. That'd be fine by me. But I can't buy myself into more than 9 at the absolute most.
Texter gets in and says, "Facts, in the South Carolina game is the single most important game on the schedule every year. Please don't say silly things like that. Trust me, I remember the pitfall in my stomach after Antonio dropped the punt and my last home game as a student. Thanks, DJ. We'll never forget that one. I get it. I've gone at their fans. I've gone at their coaches online. Their coaches' wives are, like, personally insulting me and saying I look like I work at Abercrombie and Fitch.
True.
Like, this is what, like, this is my extent of the rivalry with South Carolina. I hate those guys. I don't hate that I hate those guys, but I'm also a Clemson fan first. And what I mean by that is, if you're telling me that we lose to South Carolina and go to Charlotte with a chance to play our way into the playoff, but we beat Virginia Tech and the rest of these little middle-of-the-road ACC teams, yeah, sign me up for that. That's preferable than losing two conference games and beating South Carolina but not going to the playoff, because if best is the standard, the goal should be to win the conference and to win the national championship each and every year. And then also, as a byproduct of that, a college football playoff appearance is going to put a lump sum of money in your pocket headed into the upcoming campaign, and that is going to help your roster next year. So I get it. Trust me, I'm going to be there, and I'm going to be trying to be as unbiased as humanly possible as a lifelong fan and alum when we're playing South Carolina covering the game, but I would rather lose to them and make the playoff than beat them and not make the playoff. And if you disagree with that opinion, then it just kind of is what it is, and we see it differently. Ton of Texters are getting in here early. I'd just like for you guys to get in with your record prediction on the Adams & Co. Roofing text line as well, and tell me what you think is realistic and what you think isn't at 654-ROAR. We're going to put up a poll during the break and give a range and spectrum of records for you guys to go vote on. And then at the end of the show, we'll wrap back and we'll find a way to kind of give you a breakdown as to where the audience stands. But Sam, maybe 10-2 is a bit too bullish, and I'm willing to admit that. Here would be my pro Clemson sell, okay? The first five games, and I kind of view your season as two seasons within one season. And what I mean by that is the quality of competition and opponent in your first five games is drastically different than the quality of competition and opponent in your final seven games for this upcoming season. Your first five games dictate your season. Your NBR against LSU. You're at the crib against Georgia Southern and UNC back-to-back. There's going to be two wins. You are 2-1 going to Cal, more than likely. That is the most likely outcome, is that you are 2-1 going to California. Okay, if you're 3-0, we're probably building a Vezina statue outside the Roar. If you're 1-2, it's doomsday, and Vezina's probably not the quarterback anymore, just candidly at that point. Tate Reynolds' switch is probably already made if you lose to North Carolina or Georgia Southern. But that at-Cal game, most important game on the schedule as a swing game, and then you're back at the crib against Miami with an extra day of rest to kind of reset your body, because that Cal game is a Friday night game. Bye week, okay? Let's look after the bye week, because you said anywhere between 7-5 and 9-3, which I think is fair. And for what it's worth, I think you represent the majority of the fan base in that belief, and I'm in the minority with a little bit more of an optimistic view. I'm going to guess that you have Clemson at 3-2 after five games, or do you have them at 2-3 and dropping the Cal game?
I think they're going to be 2-3. I think they're going to lose the Cal. So I think they're going to play much better in the second half of the schedule than the first.
So we're working under the assumption that Tate Reynolds is the starting quarterback then, after week five. Because if they're 2-3, there's no way that Vezina's the quarterback. I'm just telling you that right now.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be starting.
All right, so in Sam's hypothetical, we're 2-3, hitting the bye week, and Tate Reynolds is the quarterback coming out of Charleston Southern. That's a win?
Yeah.
Okay, Virginia Tech at home.
I think they'll beat them at home.
At Florida State.
I think that game is your... I think either that one or Virginia Tech is your loss, and then you win the next four.
Okay, and then you win Syracuse, GT, Duke, and South Carolina.
I think Duke's going to be tricky, but yes.
Okay.
Just because it's on the road, and that's been a tricky game in the past. I don't think they're going to lose to South Carolina 3 years in a row as a home team. I do not see that happening. I do not think Vezina makes it through the year as the starter.
Okay.
I don't think that's a bad thing either, necessarily. Like, this is where I'm at. If they go 7-5 or 8-4, and a quarterback looks competent and looks like a guy that, if they don't go into the portal next year, Faxon, you feel like, okay, we got a guy that we can trust to go out there and improve on this year. That's fine with me. That I'm not expecting the ACC. I'm not expecting to win the ACC. I'm not expecting to go to the ACC championship game even necessarily, because I think Clemson is below Miami by a lot, and I think Clemson's a little bit below SMU as well, and I think they're on that Louisville tier, and I think a couple of other teams will be kind of near them. But if your defense plays well, which I think it will even in losses, I think they'll be competitive. I don't think they're going to get blitzed by anybody this year, especially with the Miami game being at home. If your quarterback, whoever it is, in that South Carolina game at the end of the year that could be your quarterback for next year, inspires confidence, the record is almost, it's not irrelevant to me, but it's a lot less relevant than it was last year. If you're 7-5 and your quarterback looks good and you have hope going into next year, I can stomach that. Perhaps that's too pessimistic almost, but that is kind of the building block that I'm looking for, because I'm not confident that if a quarterback doesn't show up this year, they go into the portal to get one next year. And you're still 1 year away from your star recruit, air quotes, if you believe in Kyrene Huley, being ready. Is that fair?
I don't think it's unfair. I do think that you are contributing to the narrative, and it's a narrative that's widespread. There's still nobody acknowledging the fact that this could even work and Vezina could be a multi-year starter.
I'm saying quarterback is. I don't care who it is. I don't personally believe that Christopher Vezina is the future quarterback of the program. Doesn't mean I think he stinks, but I don't think... I have a lot of questions about the offense, period. Okay. I have a lot of questions about the run game. I have a lot of questions about Vezina. I think early in the season, those are going to be a little bit more pronounced than they would be in the back half.
I'm going to put up two polls, and I'm going to ask you this question before we go to break. Is it more likely that Clemson beats one of Miami or LSU, or is it more likely that Clemson is 2-3 after 5 weeks?
More likely that they beat Miami or LSU?
Just one of the two games. Which is the more likely outcome? Clemson wins one of the two games that they're going to... Because, realistically speaking, you're only going to be an underdog for two games on your entire schedule.
Yeah.
Those are the two games that you're going to be an underdog for.
Agreed.
And Vegas odds don't mean all, and the Cal game's going to be like minus 2.5, right?
Yeah,
so you're not really...
Gonna be close,
that's going to be a coin flip type of game, but... Is it more likely that you win one of the two games or that you lose three of your first five games?
I mean, I said I think they're going to be 2-3, but I would say if you're picking between those two, I love your chances comparatively in a week one setting against LSU. I don't think they're going to beat Miami this year. I do like that it's at home, but 5 weeks into the year, I think Miami will be firing pretty highly. LSU week one with a lot of turnover could get spooky. It could get a little hairy pressure-wise for them if they don't come out and go gangbusters. Kind of similarly to what happened to Clemson last year, where they came out slow at home and you could kind of feel it, right? You kind of felt a little twinge of concern and nerves. I don't see that is impossible for LSU, but I'm not going to pick it necessarily.
Okay. Let's walk this out. I'm putting up two polls, so give me like 30 seconds and hit the roarfm.com and hit the refresh button. Go vote in both these polls that we're going to have up. We'll walk this out with Clemson football on the other side. Phone lines open. Pratt Injury Lawyers phone lines at 654-ROAR. The same to be said about the Adams & Co. roofing text line, which is exploding. We will read a plethora of texts on the other side of the quick break right here on the Roar.
The Upstate Sports Leader. 105.5 and 97.5.
The Roar FM.
Where the Upstate sounds off.
It's in the bag, but I'm ready to go, man. Just let me roll out there, and we'll go lose a game, because that would happen if I were on the team.
Maybe you can be the backup punter.
Yeah, backup punter, backup kicker, something like that. In all seriousness, though, we're talking Clemson football on the program. 654-ROAR is the number. I just put up two polls at theroarfm.com, and it is two pretty stark difference in questions. Which is more likely for 2026 Clemson football is the first question. Clemson wins one of Miami/LSU, or Clemson enters the bye week 2-3 with losses to LSU, Cal, and Miami. The other poll is simple. What will the record be? 12-0, 11-1 is the first kind of option. Then you have 10-2, 9-3, 8-4, 7-5, 6-6, or 5-7 and worse, a.k.a. no bowl game. And I'm not going to give you guys a bevy of options to be pessimistic and troll. So if you think we're going to suck, just vote no bowl game and keep it pushing. Sam, a couple things to acknowledge here before we get back to the program. You mentioned a couple of things during the break to me that I found interesting. And for what it's worth, I've placed my... my vote in both of these polls already.
As have I.
The LSU game is not just more gettable in my eyes. It is vastly more gettable than the Miami game to me, even though you are playing it on the road. Agree or disagree?
I don't know about vastly, but it's more gettable for sure.
Okay.
From an uncertainty perspective.
I don't like the element of coming back from California and having to sit and play Miami, especially with a kind of the precursor games that Miami has leading up to that, and the fact that I think there's a non-zero chance Miami loses to Wake Forest 2 weeks prior, and they could be really hungry coming off of a loss and looking for revenge. So there's a couple things in there and a couple nuggets in there of unknown. I am taking the approach that Clemson has a chance to win in Baton Rouge because I really believe that to be the case. I don't think LSU's quarterback is very good. I think it traditionally has taken Lane Kiffin a lot of time to install his offense throughout the course of off seasons. And in the transfer portal era, we know continuity, especially at quarterback, matters more than ever. Now, Clemson doesn't exactly have that benefit that's going for him, but I think they have a lot more continuity and known commodities than LSU does, who essentially has a brand new roster from top to bottom outside of a handful of position groups throughout the course of the roster. Does it change your opinion on this football team and the expectations if they beat LSU? I think the easy answer is yes, but yeah. To what degree?
I mean, a lot. If they beat, okay, how are they beating LSU? Are they coming out and winning 13-10? Are they coming out and winning a grit and grind, disgusting football game where both quarterbacks are awful? Or are they winning 30-27 and Vezina looks good? If they come out and win 30-27 and Vezina looks good, they can win the ACC. But if they come out and win 13-10 and the offense looks putrid, it reaffirms what I feel about the defense, but it still raises the same questions about the offense. But I don't care at that point. If you beat LSU, all bets are off. At that point, you've already overachieved what I expected out of you. So I don't care how they get it done that week. We could talk the next week after and the weeks going into that Miami game, if they win that game, what needs to be better out of that game or what won them that game. But I don't really care how they win that one in the short term. If they can win it, that would be a huge upset for them this year. What is the spread right now? 11.5? 10.5?
I think it's 11.5.
Like, picking them off week one with all the hype around LSU and all the pressure on them would be monumental for this program, not just from a good start to the season standpoint, but from a national, hey, we don't suck standpoint. Because I think that's the perspective a lot of people have outside of here right now. So it'd be huge.
Yeah, I think it would be huge as well. Lake Murray Michael says a Saturday night game at LSU, that would be a huge win.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way around that.
Another texter gets in and says, are you of the opinion that most Clemson fans are playoff or bust?
Not this year.
I also just don't think that's a Clemson fan thing. I mean, I think Sweeney's talked about this in the press conferences as well. That's become the barometer for success in college football. So yeah. I want to go to the playoffs every year. I'll tell you right now, whether it's realistic or not, my expectation is to go to the college football playoffs this year because this is Clemson football, and that should be the expectation every year. I'm not going to sit here and pitch into the narrative that that shouldn't be the expectation. I don't care what the roster looks like. I watched Dabo Sweeney go to the mountaintop multiple times. I watched this be the best program in college football for a multi-year sample size. I want to go to a 12-team expanded playoff. I do. And I think that should be the expectation on a year-to-year basis.
At least a crack at the ACC.
Yeah, considering we've bullied this conference and shoved them in a locker for two decades. This is our freaking conference. Go take it back. Quit making excuses and go beat teams. Like, I'm tired of hearing, like, the little old Clemson narrative and the woe-is-me narrative from our fans. I get it. Things are bad right now because we were in the dumps last year. But that doesn't mean that we have to have tempered expectations to the most ridiculous degree headed into the season where we're predicting 6-6s and 7-5s. That group last year was a group of bad apples and rotten players from a culture standpoint. And you got a lot better by just getting people out of your locker room. And I'm a firm believer in that. Truly. You got a lot better by getting some bad people out of your locker room. So hopefully this year, and again, using the word hope, which is not a strategy, but it is where I'm at on this, hopefully the buy-in and the effort and the way things look is vastly better this season. And I'm anticipating that. And I want to go to the playoffs, regardless of what the win total or the expectations are. I want to go.
Yeah, I mean, for me, this is a... I've said with the expectations, we knew going into this year that the roster would look vastly different. What we did not know last year, and I keep going back to last year before last season, is that there would be a whole new offensive scheme. I don't think anybody realistically expected after the playoff season that Garrett Riley would be gone a year later, Faxon. Now, Wes Goodwin being gone after that playoff game was not surprising. We knew that was coming. Riley being gone was not an expectation. When they hired Riley, the expectation was he'd be gone because he'd be taking someone's head coaching job somewhere. Instead, he's an analyst at Mizzou 3 years later. So that shifted things a little bit for me. The expectation for me in a year like this should be to get to the ACC championship game and be the second best team in the ACC behind Miami, because Miami is loaded and would have been loaded talent-wise comparatively in any of Clemson's national championship years. They'd be just as loaded as Clemson those years, a little less, obviously, but ridiculously loaded. That's my expectation, and that's my hope that they can do that. And after that, if you get into a one-game playoff situation, all bets are off. So get there, see what happens. I'm not overly confident they do that, but I do think they're in the mix. Like I said, I've got them at 8-4. 8-4 puts you right in that gaggle of how many teams did you have there yesterday, Faxon? Like eight?
Yeah,
there
were seven teams
in the 9-3 to 7-5 bucket.
I would say right now, and I've got it in front of me, from SMU, who I have at 10-2, down to Florida State.
It's two wins.
I've got like nine teams in between a 2-3 win buffer.
And any of those teams could step up. Any of them could fall apart. Any of them could have a wonky year. Clemson could go in either direction. There are so many unknowns on the offensive side of the ball that you could pretty much throw any range of outcome out there, and I would probably say it's got a little bit of credence to it.
So let me ask you this. 654-ROAR is the number, and keep voting in those polls at theroarfm.com. My big question here is related to the playoff, because I know that I don't want to make this a playoff or bust type of campaign. 10-2 with losses to Miami and LSU gets you in at large, correct? Even if you don't make the ACC championship game?
I mean, I would assume like you would, so. You'd be in the range. Maybe not an at large in the ACC, but you'd be in the range.
You'd be in the conversation.
You'd be
at
in the
minimum.
Back half of the you'd be in the front half of the teens, you would think, at minimum.
Texter says, facts in our season, Vezina's productivity and our defensive outlook relies on one thing, which is the ground game. Less than 125 yards a game is 6-7 wins. 125-175 is 8-9. More than 175 is 10-11. I tend to agree. Yeah. I wish we had Adam Randall. That's my opinion going into the season. I wish we had Adam Randall because, I mean, I'm taking Sweeney at his word, and I'm electing to take Sweeney at his word when he says they have five backs that we can trust. I don't know if I like all five of our backs as much as Sweeney does, nor would I expect myself as somebody detached from the program and doesn't see these guys every day to like him as much as Sweeney does, because these are his players, and he recruited all of them, and he's developing all of them. I just don't see an alpha, and I don't see a lead back in the running back room. And listen, you can win like that. I'm a by-committee guy by nature. I'm just not sure how good any of these cats are. Like, think about the running backs we've had roll through here. I don't know, man. I really hope Gid pans out. I'll just say that because I was very unimpressed with what I saw last season, and I do think that there is a logical reason to believe that he takes a big step forward this year. First year in college, you're 18 years old and away from your parents for the first time. You're adjusting from being a superstar that's nationally acclaimed to being a backup that's being used sparingly. You have a full year of nutrition. You have a full year of weights. You have a full year of getting to learn offensive schematics and what it takes from you at the collegiate level. I hope he's ready. I hope he's ready, which is where I'm kind of at right now at running back. And I love Rory, CJJ, but the rest of the room, take it or leave it for me as far as productivity goes, as far in their career, and really what the upside is going to look like and entail for those guys long term.
The run game is the biggest thing outside of quarterback that I don't know. I don't know anything about. When Chad Morris was here the first time, there were a lot of questions about the run game. No? There were a lot of questions about if he ran the ball enough, if he ran the ball at the right times. I don't see any reason why those questions wouldn't exist again a decade later, Faxon. So that exists, and the running backs that he has now are worse, likely, than what he had back then. So behind an offensive line you don't know anything about with running backs, other than Chris Johnson Jr., who I think is going to be really, really good, and they should get him the ball as much as possible in as many funky ways as they possibly can, you don't know anything about your running backs. So while Dabo does say we have five running backs we can trust, I don't know if I believe him. I don't know. There's probably one or two or one and a half. And we see growth out of Davidson this year. I'd be stunned if we didn't. I think he's going to be a lot better. We're going to see a lot of fun out of Johnson, but he's not an every down back. Do they run the ball enough? And is their offensive line healthy enough, which has been a problem the last couple of years, and consistent enough in front of them to consistently run the ball at a high level, which they did not do for the majority of last year, even with Adam Randall being fantastic. So that's a huge question for me. The run the run game being good is a big part of if Christopher Vezina has success this year, too.
Oh,
you
yeah.
do not want to put a ton of pressure on that guy going into LSU. If they go into LSU and can't run the football, they're going to get killed. Is that Is that too pessimistic to say? If they can't run the football with some level of success against LSU, Faxon, they're going to get blitzed because Vezina's going to be under fire from the first snap of the game.
That's why we scored 10 points last year against LSU.
They couldn't run the ball.
It was because we couldn't run the ball. So it's just, realistically speaking, like it. Hopefully your offensive coordinator doesn't like suicide bomb your team with the call sheet again like he did last year, which is essentially what this was, with 28 out of the last 29 plays of the game being put in the hands of Cade Klubnik.
Insanity.
Which is legitimate lunacy to this day.
You could see during the game his trust in his offensive line and his himself. You could see it eroding. You could see it eroding visibly as he rolled out further right and out of the pocket every single play. It was fascinating to watch in real time. It sucked to watch in real time, but it was fascinating to watch that in real time. You could see the gears turning in his head. I forgot it was 28 out of 29.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Texter gets in about CJJ and Davidson and need one of the other three to emerge as the third guy and liking that all three of them have a different strong suit. I mean, I see the vision, but if you want my honest evaluation, I wish you could put Jarvis Green's brain into David Ezeamume's body and he would be the best running back on the team by a landslide. That's kind of where I'm at. I think Jarvis Green has the most natural feel for the position, but I don't think his profile matches one of a P4 running back. I think Eazy-E has the most violent nature and running style, but I don't think he understands the game at as high of a level as some of the other backs in the room. I think Haynes is the unknown factor because we don't know what the burst and the explosiveness looks like post-injury. And then you have Davidson as the guy that's been deemed the guy, but we haven't really seen it at this level. And then Rory is the most productive college player of the bunch, but he's skinny and he's not an every down back. So we'll walk this out a little bit more on the other side, Sam. There's a lot of intriguing stuff that goes into it. And what's also intriguing is the real estate market right now here in the upstate. Summer in the upstate is more than a season. It's a way of living. Evenings that linger a little bit longer. Quiet luxury, thoughtful experiences. Homes that reflect not just where you live, but how you live. And for those seeking something exceptional, whether it's a refined in-town residence, a private retreat, or a legacy property near the water, don't keep falling into that trap of maybe one day. Go with Morgan Coleman. She offers a tailored approach to buying and selling with intention. And you can search Morgan Coleman Real Estate online to make your summer dreams come true. Quick break here on the Roar. Let's talk more running backs and Clemson football on the other side. It's going to be a Clemson football jam-packed show today, to be candid. So be ready to bring your Tiger hat and be ready to talk.
The sports world never stops spinning. We bring order to the athletic calendar.
From sunup to sundown,
we've got you covered with the most up-to-date sports talk on the airwaves.
105.5, 97.5, The Roar.
Your upstate sports authority.
Trip down memory lane with Chad Morris. I still can't believe Chad's our offensive coordinator. I think Chad's the man, and I know that I'm in the top percentile on planet Earth in belief that this is going to work. I eliminated the 2014 season for this exercise because Deshaun tore his ACL, and I don't think it's very fair to be going off of Cole Stout football or Nick Schuessler football or whoever was rolling the ball out by the end of the season there. I think it's a very common belief within our fan base that Chad struggled to run the ball his first time around the block here. Clemson put up three straight top 60 seasons nationally rushing the football in the first 3 years Chad Morris was here. And in those 3 years, Clemson's national rank for total offense was 27th, 9th, and 9th, putting up 33.6 PPG, 41 PPG, and then 40 PPG in each of the first three seasons. Now, different clock rules, different rosters, better roster, more than likely, objectively speaking. But from 2011 to 2013, Clemson averaged almost 500 total yards per game, over 300 yards through the air, about 175 yards a game on the ground with 38.2 PPG, a 31-8 overall record, three consecutive 10-win seasons, and three consecutive seasons with a 3,000-yard passer, a 1,000-yard receiver, and a 1,000-yard rusher. Clemson and Baylor were the only FBS programs to produce that passer-receiver-rusher combination in every season from 2011 to 2013. So, and all that being used from Chad's biography that's done by Ross Taylor on the website. The track record speaks for itself with Chad. The question that comes into play is the amount of time it's been since he's been doing this. And can he knock the rust off, figuratively speaking, in an effective enough time frame for Clemson to be a really good football team this season? And I think that's the million-dollar question, Sam. And it sounds like to me, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like to me that your belief, based off of the conversations that we've had with you about Chad and some of the skepticism you have with the hire, combined with what your season prediction looked like earlier in the program, you think it's going to take a while for Chad to knock that rust off, but you do think there's going to be a point where things click towards the back half of the season for Clemson, correct? Like, that's kind of where you're at?
I think the defense is going to win Clemson a lot of football games this year. I'm not going to sugarcoat a prediction and say I think the offense is ever going to put it together fully this year. I didn't like the hire. I still don't like the hire. Now, it might work and make me look stupid. I look stupid frequently. But it has been a long time, man. It's been a long time. Like, I care somewhat about the things that happened 12 years ago. But they were 12 years ago. And there has been nothing good since. And that scares me. It's hard for me to buy in when nothing good has happened since that time for Chad Morris. And I know it. You could say he coached his son. He did a lot of other stuff. He could have gone somewhere else. Maybe he could have, but he didn't. And what we saw wasn't good. So for me, that skepticism is going to permeate my entire belief about the offense until I see proof of concept that what happened 12, 13 years ago can happen again in 2026. Football is football. If you can call a football game, you can call a football game. That doesn't leave you, I don't think. But it's going to take time for him to tap back into it if he's going to tap back into it during the year. And I don't love the personnel that he's working with on the offensive side of the ball at the most important positions to feel like it's going to click fully at any point this year. But I think the defense is going to be really good. I think they've got good weaponry outside of some questions about the running back room. And that, to me, gets them to 8 wins anyway. But I think we're having a lot of the same questions at the end of the year about what the offense looks like in 2027 that we had in 2025 going into this year.
Okay, and that's a fair perspective. Let's get Delvin in here. Pratt Injury Lawyers phone line, 654-ROAR is the number. Delvin, good to hear from you. Appreciate you checking in.
Sam just took the words out of my mouth. I want to talk baseball, too, but Sam just took the words out of my mouth. That's why I'm scared about the hire, too, because, like you said, it's been a long time since the last time he was on the sideline coaching was at Texas State. But he wasn't the offensive coordinator. He was the passing game coordinator. So I don't know. Maybe he can take some concepts from there when he was there, but that was a couple years ago.
I'll interject. Chad was in the building for the team that won the ACC last year, man. So I don't know how much that really matters at the end of the day. Like, football is football, and yeah. I don't really
maybe
care.
But maybe you're right, though. Maybe you learned something from
Chad was in the building for Clemson last year, which most people don't realize or know. Chad has been in the building of top 10 to and 25 teams on a year-to-year basis, on a week-to-week basis for a 3-plus-year sample size now. I don't think it's that big of a deal at all.
Yeah, that's what you said, because you said he was some company, he went to, like, different schools during the season, like, different schools, and looked at their and checked out their offenses and stuff. So you're right about that. Like, that's what he said. He said he went to different schools when he worked for some company. And what do you think about the step away from that? I think, but I'm not saying I'm going to be a wait-and-see approach with him, but – he did, but it's not like he went out of football at all. Like you said, he was in different buildings and looking at different offenses. So maybe he learned some things from other teams. But going to baseball, what do you think about Alex Althoff clapping back at Ken Rosenthal when Ken Rosenthal said Braves are going out the back? No, he said we're looking for playoff starters. So who you think is right in that? Ken Rosenthal, or you think Alex Althoff is the one who's telling the truth?
I didn't even see this, if you want me to be honest with you. I don't even know what you're talking about. Did our GM actually diss a reporter? Like, this is a real thing that happened?
I don't think this reporter, but it's been reported that he said Ken Rothdahl said the Braves are looking for bats, and he went on the radio station and said we're looking at the trade deadline, and we're gonna be looking for playoff starter. He didn't say nothing about bats. He just said we're looking at playoff starters.
Yeah, I mean, I think pitching is the priority and the premium right now. I mean, your whole rotation is dead.
I would have said Sonny Gray, but the way Boston is playing right now, you might not get a chance to get Sonny Gray.
I just don't think you can bank on the fact that Smith-Shawver or Schwellenbach are going to be back or Strider is going to be back in the playoff rotation. So,
right now to the deadline, do you think the Braves get a starter at the trade deadline?
Say that one more time. Sorry, you broke up a little bit. Do you think we're getting a bat or a starter?
I'm asking you right now, before the trade deadline happens, I'm saying, if you had your gut right now, do you think a Braves will end up with a starter at the trade deadline?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think Anthopoulos isn't going to nut-hug this year. There's no reason to do that. This is going to have to be a season where the Braves get semi-aggressive with some prospects and potentially some other type of capital or a core piece if you want a chance to win the World Series. And I think you have just as good of a chance of winning the World Series when healthy as anybody in the league. So I'd be very disappointed if you don't expand your roster and improve your roster exponentially at the deadline. I would like to see up to three additions for Atlanta. I don't understand why baseball teams do this. It drives me nuts, and Sam knows that this is an opinion that I've had for ages now. A.J. Preller and the Padres are like the only people that have this figured out for how I would run an organization. Just send them. Just send the prospects and just send the players. Like, the sun's going to come up tomorrow, and if you are not confident enough to make your decision and live with the consequences of that, then you should not be in a position of general manager. So send the prospects, send the kids that are in single A, and if it looks like a bad decision 5 years from now, guess what? You're probably already fired anyways. So why does it matter? Go make your team better when you have a chance of winning something and becoming legendary. That's always been my, like, POV on the situation in baseball.
Yeah, and I don't mean to bounce out like this, but going back to Chad, guys, do you think we'll see more jet sweep motion in the offense this year that we haven't seen in the last couple of years with Chad back at offense coordinator?
The offense is going to be vastly more creative, and, I mean, the offense is going to be a lot better. I'm just telling you that right now. The offense is going to be a lot better.
What I'm thinking is, you have C.J. Johnson in the backfield with Gennison Davis, and they do the jet sweep motion with C.J. Anderson, whether he get the ball or not, or CV can put and throw a play action pass to Betancourt or the other tight ends out there, or hand it off to Gideon Davis. They're all thinking, like, you can fake jet sweep or hand it to him on a jet sweep. They're all thinking.
Thanks for checking in, Delvin. Appreciate you. I think there's going to be a lot of creativity and incorporation of that. I think you're going to see OPH lined up at H-back. I think you're going to see CJJ in the slot. I think you're going to see your receivers cross-train for the first time in 3 years, which is just asinine that it wasn't happening the last 3 years under Coach Riley. And I want to see TJ Moore and Bryant West go in the slot, personally. That's just my opinion. I want to see the freshman on the field. I want to see G3. I want to see Naeem the Dream. I don't want to see much of Tyler Brown. I know who Tyler Brown is at this point, and I don't think he's very good. So I would love a scenario in which you have Moore and Sellers on the boundary, and then you put Wesco in the slot, or maybe it's Wesco and Sellers on the boundary with Moore in the slot, or maybe it's Wesco and Moore on the boundary, and you put Burrows in the slot, or maybe you play four receivers, and you put one of the big two in the slot with Naeem, and you put G3 in and the other one of the big two on the outside. There are options here, and this is why I have belief personally in Chad Morris entering the upcoming campaign, is because I watched the man get the ball to playmakers for a living. That has been his calling card. There is no absence of playmakers on Clemson's offense. And even Sam, who's on a little bit more of a pessimistic side of things with the Chad hire, which I think is fair with the logic he's laid out, Sam is even talking about the receivers and how they're the calling card of the offense. It is undeniable that this is the strength of your offense, is your pass catchers and your skill guys that can make plays with the football in their hands. So that's why Chad got hired. Chad has excelled at this his whole life as a football coach, and this is Chad's number one strength as a play caller, is ball to playmakers in space. That is his whole thing. It's the entire premises of how he calls offense. And Clemson has a ton of playmakers. So if you can't get them the ball, then I think that's collective failure on everyone, from head coach to offensive coordinator to quarterback to more, because you have a top five skill group in the country at the end of the season as far as playmakers and ability with the ball in space goes. Now it's just about deploying those guys in the correct way and trying to make the most of it. We'll talk more about this in hour number two of the program. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in. We'll expand it more to some ACC general football talk right after this.
WCCP-FM 105.5 Clemson. Greenville Anderson. WAHD-AM 1560. Cowpens. 97.5 Spartanburg. We are the Roar.